Welcome to another episode of Connecting the Dots podcast. My name is H.F. Mason. I'm a general surgeon and chief quality officer for Baptist Memorial Healthcare Corporation.
Hello, everybody. I'm Brad Parsons, vice president of market operations at Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Well, guys, today we are so excited to have on the show today Christian von Nierwerberg and Robert Bissois-Diener. Christian spent his time in the UK and Canary Islands. He coaches professionals, and he's also an avid motorcyclist. And I think Robert's coming from us from the Pacific Northwest. Am I right, Robert? And he is a psychologist. And today we're going to be talking about a subject that is very important to us here at Baptist and through the Baptist Management System. It's their book called Radical Listening. And before we talk about the book, Christian, why don't you start off telling us a little bit about your background, and then we'll let Robert tell us. And I really want to know how you guys came together as well. I bet that's a great story.
Thank you so much, Harvey. It's really such a pleasure to be here. One of my professional roles is an academic at the Center for Positive Health Sciences at a University of Medicine and Health Sciences. So I'm so grateful to be here. My personal story is probably very interesting. I'll give you the 1-minute version of it, which is my mother was Japanese and my father was Belgian. And I was brought up in Lebanon in the Middle East. So pretty kind of multicultural childhood. And I always wanted to come and live and work in Europe. So I came to the United Kingdom about 30 years ago and just started working in this area. And the one thing that's been consistent is my interest in the power of conversations and different ways we can have conversations. So I initially started out with coaching psychology. I developed my work in that area and then encountered positive psychology and became curious about the science of optimal functioning or well-being. And that's when I got to know Robert Bissois-Diener. He's one of the leading figures in positive psychology. You know, nobody knows as much as Robert does, I would say, around positive psychology. So that's one of the reasons we started working together.
Thanks, Christian. That's very kind of you to say. I'm pretty sure there are a lot of people that know a lot more than me about positive psychology, but I will admit that I do know a lot. I have been a well-being researcher for 25 years, but not associated with a university, which gives me the intellectual freedom to just ask the questions that I'm interested in without having to pursue a publish or perish mentality. And along the way, I leveraged my knowledge of well-being into a coaching and consulting career. So that is my professional self. And that is why Christian and I have crossed paths. But we really didn't become friends until the pandemic hit. And when the pandemic hit, for both of us, as for everyone, it was a very uncertain time, pretty anxious time. A lot of our work dried up as independent coaches and consultants. And so we reached out to one another across the ocean and across the internet to meet via Zoom just to help us structure these uncertain days. And we said, you know, let's just meet for a couple hours each week and just have an unscripted conversation. And our conversations were far ranging, but they always focused on coaching, on improvement, on the change process, on how to have better conversations, on what supports people through change, those types of issues. And it was our mutual love of communication as a tool for improvement that led ultimately to us co-authoring this book, Radical Listening.
That's a great start. Thank you both for being here on Connecting the Dots, and thank you for this work. We talk about listening a lot on other podcasts, and maybe we'll get to some of that. But I'm curious, after these conversations, you've got this book. And so if you'll really kind of highlight some of the concepts of the book as a launch point for us today, that would be great.
Well, it started with the idea that we felt like listening sort of needed a refresh. I mean, listening has been around for a long time in sales. You know, it's like listen to the customer, listen for their pain points. There's active listening, you know, repeat back what the person's saying for clarity. You know, there's just so many approaches, but all of it felt like it lacked, I guess, pizzazz in a way. Mm-hmm. I think that it would just be nice if people heard the topic of listening and said, that's just inherently fascinating. Tell us more. What's the most counterintuitive thing? And it's got to be something more than, oh, well, you're probably distracted by your smartphone. If you can learn to put your smartphone away, you'll probably be a better listener. I mean, that's certainly true. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that people are going to be wide-eyed about that piece of advice. So Christian and I started with a very simple premise that listening is motivated and that you listen with a particular intention. And there are a huge range of intentions that you might listen with. So you might listen in order to entertain a group. You might listen in order to learn something. You might listen in order to validate another person. And knowing what your intention is can be helpful as you walk into a conversation, because whatever that intention is going to guide your attention. And I'll just give you two quick examples of this. If your intention is to entertain a group, you're not going to listen to everything in the conversation. You're going to be very selective about what you attend to. So, for example, funny people put a lot of their attention towards pauses, because pauses are where you insert jokes. And so they're paying particular attention to pauses. If I'm listening to validate you, I'm going to pay particular attention, not to how you're doing pauses, but to your emotional expressions and what you're communicating in terms of your emotional experience of the events you're describing. So whatever it is that your intention is making you a very efficient listener by guiding your attention to just a slice of the conversation.
And if I could just add something to that, the other big idea here is us being aware of our own intentions can help in making sure that we're matching our intention to what it is the person who's being listened to wants. And that matching, we argue, is what's behind the subtitle of our book, which is The Art of True Connection. So I probably got into my curiosity about listening because I'm just fascinated by how can human beings connect better with one another. And so our exploration of radical listening led us to this conclusion that actually listening is such a powerful tool for doing this. And in some cases, we reached the conclusion that sometimes listening is the intervention itself.
I like that a lot. You know, one of the things that you talk about in the book and is co-creation. So can you, Christian, kind of speak a little bit about, because I think I really like how you talked about the connections and the intentions, Robert. I love the idea of the intentionality about why and how we're listening. And so how can we be co-creators as we're listening as well?
Yeah, thank you, Brad. It's exactly about co-creation. It's about both parties, and there could be more people in a listening interaction, obviously, but let's assume there's two people. It's about creating a dialogue there through being aware of our own intention and being thoughtful about what the other person needs. So it's something we were talking about just before we came on air. But one of, like, you know, the concept of humble inquiry, we just talked about that book by Professor Edgar Schein. And, you know, one of the things that is needed for these kinds of meaningful conversations is intellectual humility. So that idea of humility, so that we're trying to remove everything that can get in the way of connection. And sometimes status can get in the way. Sometimes power games can get in the way. So in trying to peel away all of the things that can get in the way of connection and then bringing our true selves, you know, being really authentic and genuine and humble, I think it's possible to have more genuine connections. And for us, connection is only the first step. We think radical listening leads to better connections. But then the connection leads to dialogue. Dialogue leads to relationships. Better relationships lead to ultimately better outcomes. And I know we're all interested in those things, but we think radical listening might be one of the answers to what's the first step towards some of those loftier goals.
You know, this is fascinating because, you know, here on Connecting the Dots, we think of a lot of things as skills that can be learned. Now, obviously, just like public speaking, some people are more gifted at public speaking. Some people are better listeners. You always hear, oh, he's a good listener or she's a good listener. But if I'm hearing you guys, I mean, depending on the situation, there are specific skills and cues and things that we can pick up on to make us become better listeners in that given situation. And if I'm hearing you correctly, sometimes we may be listening well, but with the wrong intention and with the wrong reason. And you know, you may not be, you think you're totally listening and you may not be connecting with that person at all. Unpack that for us.
Sure. Spot on. I am not a natural listener. I want to be upfront about that. I have a background as an instructor. I've taught at the university before. I have the gift of gab. I love to speak. When I told my friends, family members, colleagues that I was writing a book on listening, the most common response I received was laughter. They thought, not you, surely. And the good news is that it is a learnable set of skills, but I think the first step is recognizing all the different obstacles. And the obstacles are not just the distractions of your schedule or your smartphone. The obstacles are in some ways more insidious than that, because most of them are well-intentioned. Like being polite is often an obstacle to listening. Thinking that you already know the answer is an obstacle to listening. Sometimes even the desire to share, like, oh, I also went through a similar experience, I also had a case like that, can prevent listening because you're just wanting to share instead of receive. So recognizing, as Christian said, that with that intellectual humility, that maybe this is just something I could improve on, just from the get-go, having that attitude that I want to listen better. And then from there, there's a whole bunch of specific skills around how do I quiet myself? How do I just pause for a beat, not jump in at every opportunity? How do I ask better questions? How do I use my intention to pay closer attention, to notice more? Because typically the best conversations, when you notice something and then you comment on the thing you're noticing, or you ask about the thing you're noticing, that feels like a very in the moment conversation that feels highly engaged to both parties.
Yeah, it's really good. I love this dialogue. And Christian, we really appreciate you calling out a friend and colleague and somebody that's really well respected in our organization and across the space, and Edgar Schein, his work. And today that Peter is continuing to carry out, been on the podcast several times, and we're super grateful for their work. And I love to hear how that has influenced your work and also how they go together. I mean, Robert, you just articulated it really well. They go together. They fit together so well. So I love this dialogue, and I think our listeners will really enjoy it as well. Robert, you just went through and kind of listed off. I caught several, but I know in radical listening, there are several core competencies, and you kind of highlighted a few of them in your answer just then. But for our listeners, will you kind of unpack a few of those, maybe a little bit more?
Sure. So we have six skills that are the foundational skills. And I want to be cautious. We just created six skills. There could be eight, there could be four, but six seem like a decent number. And three of those are what we think of as sort of internal skills. These would be invisible. They're happening within you. They're mental states largely. And then there are three behavioral skills. These are things that an interlocutor would see you do in a conversation. So among the internal skills are noticing, so that's just paying attention, quieting yourself, sort of not jumping in prematurely, not being distracted, and accepting. And that's a particularly difficult one. We can unpack that more. But then the three behavioral skills are acknowledging, questioning, and judiciously interjecting.
I love how you say judiciously. You know, I guess I want to work backwards a little bit. And how do you define judicious interjection?
Well, you know, it's really funny. Robert and I are very different types of listeners. And I think I came into this conversation with quite a few people saying, Christian, you're a great listener. And that was because I was pretty good at the quieting part of things. I would be very quiet. I would never interrupt. I mentioned to you that my mother was Japanese. If she taught me one thing, it was never interrupt people. Really, you know, this idea of being super polite. So, and I was a trained coach and I trained other people to become coaches. So for me, interrupting was a red line. That should never happen, I was saying. But what I learned through writing the process and because of Robert's different way of listening, because with Robert, when you're talking to Robert, you can tell that he's fully engaged. You know, the one thing you can be sure about is Robert is interested, but he's not sitting there quietly the whole time. He's jumping in with things. He's giving us examples. He'll put a joke in here and there. And so the judicious interjection, the reason we went with interjection rather than interruption, Brad, was I was just so uncomfortable with the interruption. It still sounds rude to me. But the idea of interjection, what we mean by judicious is this idea of jumping in, making a comment, a minimal encourager, saying something that shows that you're very well connected to the topic, and then jumping out. Yeah. So that's interjection. It's not taking the turn from the other person. It's not railroading them. It's not dominating the conversation. It's just jumping in to show full engagement. And now that I look back, Brad, I would be talking to someone, and let's say they mentioned something that was of interest to me. I wouldn't say anything because I'd be waiting for them to finish their train of thought. It could be 3-4 minutes later. And when they finish what they've said, they've gone on to a new topic. But I would then jump in and say, you know, 3 minutes ago you mentioned that thing. And my intention was to be polite and respectful. But I now think the person I was talking to might have thought, Christian isn't really following what I'm saying because he's going back to something I said a little while ago.
Great point. Wow, I have so many questions and comments. You know, I think about, you know, I love Ted Lasso, and I think about the pub scene when he's in there throwing darts, and you know, he's talking about being curious. And where does curiosity, and I'm talking about genuine curiosity, where does it come into these six skills? Because some people are naturally curious, and some people, you know, are not.
And y'all really like the Ted Lasso reference, right?
I love Ted Lasso. One of the favorite things I've watched. You know, I live in England, right? So, and I love Kansas, and I think that's where Ted Lasso is supposed to be from, right? So, yeah, I love that series because he's a radical coach. You know, he's got a slightly different take on how to motivate teams, etc. So I forgot what the question is now.
Curiosity.
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 Curiosity. So curiosity, first of all, it's kind of central to curiosity allows us to stay non-judgmental and show interest in the topic. So curiosity is central. But I would add a word to it. And I think that is, in radical listening, we're probably talking about respectful curiosity. And so if we're listening to someone who's talking, we're not really following anything that pops into my mind. It's not really, what am I curious about? It's more being curious about what my conversational partner is interested in. And now some people, Harvey, are going to say, wait a minute, you know, what if somebody's talking to me about something I'm not interested in, but they're an important person in my life? I would say we can be curious about them as a person. So if the topic is not particularly engaging, I think we can always revert to bringing that curiosity about this person. How are they managing this? What's their take on this particular situation? So if I were to try to capture what is radical listening in a phrase, Radical listening is a way of listening to someone so that they feel seen, valued, and heard. And if we can bring that curiosity about the person and their topic rather than a generalized, you know, like you said, some people are just curious about everything. But if I could show I'm curious about the topic or the person that I'm talking to, they're going to believe I'm interested.
Yeah. Christian, that's such an amazing point and such a good distinction, because I think sometimes people think, oh, if you're just curious, that itself is sort of a good, a conversational good. But just imagine, you know, if someone said, oh, you know, I went to the Taylor Swift concert, and you're like, really? What was your seat number? You know, like you're curious about it, but it almost seems beside the point, right? It's just not curiosity that's in the service of the person's experience or any kind of connection.
Yeah, that's a great point. A good point. You know, one of the things we ask our nurses to do and physicians is to try to make a connection with that patient.
Yes.
And we feel like that goes such a long way to, and it may be, where are you from? Oh yeah, you know, I was there. I know so and so. Do you know so and so? We're in the South, so everybody knows everybody. You can't talk about anybody because somebody's going to be related to them. But talk to us about the importance of connecting with that patient. I mean, or that person. But I know sometimes standing in the grocery checkout line when there's 30 people behind you, that's not the time to try to make a connection with the checkout clerk. But, you know, in our ordinary, you know, interactions and in those interactions with patients.
Well, it's funny because it actually doesn't take as much time as people think. I think people think I just don't have time. You know, look, we all have busy schedules. We have back-to-back appointments, especially in something like imagine an urgent care situation where you already are running behind. You don't need to sit down and interview the person for 15 minutes. You don't need the whole backstory. It can be something quite quick. And you can even do this during a grocery store checkout, to use your example. If you say, how are you today? You're just following the script and the person's going to say, good. It leads to very little conversation. But if you say, oh, do you have any big plans today? It's something that they can answer within the 60-second confine of that interaction. That's not too personal, and you know, they can say yes or no. And I think that in the healthcare setting, you can do it. So I'm just going to give you two quick examples, personal examples. One, I was brought into my doctor's office recently, and the nurse who brought me in and took my vitals and did all the standard stuff also asked me if I wanted a bottle of water. And that had never happened to me. And I thought, well, yeah, I guess I do. I mean, yeah, let's stay hydrated. And that was such a nice connection. And then in another recent circumstance, I just noticed this, that I had a doctor who was using an AI note taker. And when that happened, the doctor paid more attention to me. And instead of typing away while I was talking, they were making eye contact. And I happened to notice that they asked more questions than the previous doctor had maybe a month prior.
Yeah,
those are great examples. And, you know, we see a lot today of kind of the emergence of AI. But I really hope one of the smartest ways that we think we see is that it can be help us be more intentional and hopefully listen better. So I think this your work can really help us pay dividends there. I want to jump back and ask. I love the six core competencies. And, you know, we talked about interjecting a little bit and I had a question there. But is there one core competency that you feel like that people struggle with the most?
Yeah, I would say, Brad, in our short experience, I mean, this book has only just come out, but in almost every conversation, the challenging one is accepting. And people are always asking us about, what does that mean? You know, so let me just clarify what accepting means. And it has pretty far-reaching implications, I think. So in the context of the kinds of conversations we're talking about, accepting means accepting the right of people to hold the opinion that they hold. And it's not accepting their arguments or having to accept everything that they're saying, but it's actually accepting that person has a right to have that opinion. And the reason we think it's so important is if we start without that, and imagine all of the conversations that do happen without the accepting of the other person's right to have a very different view of what's going on. If we don't have that, then there is no connection. And of course, we're not listening. And the reason we're not listening is because I'm thinking, well, that person is wrong, I'm right. And if we follow the logical path, if I'm right and I know the correct answer already, well, why would I listen? So we really think that, and we're not saying this isn't every case. We're not saying you have to go and listen to everybody now. But in situations where the relationship is important, either because it's a pre-existing important relationship for you, or it's a kind of patient-client type relationship where we know that the perceived quality of the relationship is important, in those situations, we need to become more comfortable with accepting that. And that's, you know, for me, it's giving people kind of a minimum level of respect as another human being, to say, I respect you as a human being. And as a human being, I don't really know how the context which you were brought up in, the values that you have, but I accept that you have just as much right as I do to have an opinion. But Brad, I'm just going to piggyback on this because there is something else I wanted to mention about quieting, if that's okay.
Please.
So the quieting, it is about, you know, managing our inner dialogue, what's going on for us as we're interacting with others. And that's so that we can give them our full attention. And if I'm tussling with a lot of stuff in my own mind, of course, I'm partially distracted by that. But this brings the other aspect, which is very important for us in radical listening, which is the question of well-being. And the point I want to make here is that for us to be able to give what we're talking about to others, we do need to look after ourselves. And it's not, you know, indulgent for health professionals, for example, to look after their well-being. I think it's essential, because unless we're well and we've got the minimum of what we need, we're not able to provide this kind of high quality listening that we're talking about.
Yeah, I like the whole idea of quieting. You know, there's one of my favorite, it's an older song, is Alison Krauss's, you know, you say it best when you say nothing at all. I mean, you know, sometimes that's the best way to make a connection, is just not to say anything. But, you know, also getting back to the accepting, I do think that, and I was, you know, in the situation that we're in today, everything's either 100% black or 100% white or red or blue, and I think we confuse the notion of accepting with agree, but that's not necessarily true. I mean, we, you know, we can 100% accept you as a human being and accept what you're trying to say. We may not agree with you at all, and we can respectfully say, you know what, I don't agree with anything you're saying. But that's not going to affect, you know, as much as we won't allow it, it's not going to affect our relationship with one another, you know. So
yeah, and in fact, that's where that curious listening comes in. If you're interested in deepening the relationship with the person you're talking to, and you don't agree with them, then you shift from what their argument is, and shift more to their experience. How did you come up with that argument? Like, what's happened to you in your life that your experience has led you to this thought through conclusion? I think you're probably smart. I think you're looking at a slice of the world. I'm just curious what evidence you have for it. And that's where we get better conversations, and we cooperate better with one another because we are more accepting of one another.
You know, I mentioned I grew up in Beirut, Lebanon. You know, the time that I was growing up there, it was a war zone. And there were literally one part of the city, people in one part of the city were bombing and shelling people in the other part of the city. And, you know, that's an example of black and white, you know, red and blue, if there ever was one. And while we were divided, because there was actually a line called the Green Line in Beirut that splits West Beirut from East Beirut. On either side of the line, we couldn't understand the other side. We're like, what is wrong with them? How, you know, there was no communication. But when there was a ceasefire, I was still young at the time. Some of the young people in West Beirut, where I was, we met with some of the young people in East Beirut. And we actually had that conversation, say, look, we really disagree with you. We have very different views. But how is it that you were doing those things to us? And what really amazed me back then, and this was when I was, I don't know, 15 years old, was I was wrong. I just saw them as completely evil. There's no way, I can't understand why morally they would do what they were doing. But the amazing thing is they said the same about us. They said, we couldn't understand why you're doing that to us. And I think from that very early experience, I've just thought, you know, there must be a way that we can overcome these seemingly insurmountable barriers. And I've always been hopeful. And you know, right now, we talked about the moment we're in now. I think hope is more necessary than it's ever been. And if our radical listening idea can just give us that sense that, look, there is something we can do. We can take a small step ourselves, just a tiny little step, by reaching out and listening to others, I think that's going to be important and helpful. And Robert and I would be delighted if a few people feel more hopeful as a result of reading the book.
Hey guys, I just want to say thank you so much for your time today. I mean, such a thoughtful conversation, such a great topic. And I want to call out some things that we hold very close to us, principles of our management system. Humility, respectful curiosity is what we talked about today. And those things help build true connections and help build trust among teams, which is another one of our principles. So thank you all for a great dialogue.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you, guys. And for our listeners, the book is Radical Listening, The Art of True Connection. And you can get it at Amazon or anywhere that you buy your books. And once again, guys, thank you very much on behalf of Baptist Memorial Healthcare.
Yeah, it was lovely. Thank you.